Morning. Are you all right? I hope you are. I trust you are.
Me, yeah, I'm all right, fine.
Thanks for asking. All right. It is now Tuesday, isn't it? Tuesday, the 7th of April in the year of our Lord, 2026. Just tick past 8 in the AM, British summer time. You are in the glorious band, the Chosen Few. My band of brothers and sisters. Thank you for joining me. Without you guys, it's not a thing. It really isn't a thing. As always, I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning? Good sir.
Morning, yeah, I'm all good.
Great. Okay, hopefully something slightly different this morning. We have been talking about since day one, mentioned that we might have guests. Hopefully we're going to have our first guest this morning. You know, technical things permitting. Hopefully we'll have a guest. You might have guessed who it is from the thumbnail, I believe. I don't make the thumbnails or anything, but I believe it's on the thumbnail. Only bloody Rupert Lowe, isn't it? Only the leader of the Restore Party, the next Prime Minister of these British Isles. Hopefully he's going to come in the next 5, 10 minutes, something like that. Fingers crossed. Okay. Until then, I shall just start the show as usual. So let's see what have we got. What have the corporate mainstream media, what are they talking about this morning? What's that evil cabal of Fleet Street editors trying to tell you is or isn't important this morning? Okay, we've got doctors hold patients hostage and the whole of the moon. Too high. Too soon. You saw the whole of the moon. So, okay, the three big stories this morning are the British Medical Association and trainee doctors going on strike starting today. Holding patients hostage is one way of putting it, or that's the way the papers are characterizing it. The whole of the moon, the Artemis mission, Artemis 2, did fly around the dark side of the moon, and they're on their way back now. And of course, more Iran stuff, endless Iran stuff. Well, Mr. Trump's deadline is 8 p.m. Eastern today as well, which will be 1 a.m. tomorrow morning, British time. That's when the deadline runs out, and Trump is going to unleash hell on Persia. It's what is it, Power Station and Bridge Day, he was calling it. And Keir Starmer doesn't want to have, like, really doesn't want anything to have to do with that. Like, doesn't want US aeroplanes to fly out of Britain or use British airspace to do that stuff. It's one thing to strike military targets, another to just strike loads of civilian targets. All right, let's have a quick look then, a quickly run through. If Mr. Lowe is to come on the stream in the next 5, 10 minutes, we'll quickly give you the, because I want to chat to him, of course, while we've got him. Quickly have a look at the headlines. In the Express, it's a good paper. As walkouts cost the NHS an estimated £3 billion in 3 years, Tories warn doctors hold patients hostage with strikes. It was a warm day yesterday. That's all that picture is supposed to be. It was a nice warm day yesterday. In some papers they're reporting that it's like the 15th strike action these junior doctors have done since 2023. It's a lot, isn't it? That is really quite, well, militant's not the word, but you know, it's quite extensive, I would call that. Not many other unions are that on it. Okay, 3 billion cost of doctor strikes. So they say something like £50 million a day, because to cover all their work, the NHS has to just hire other consultant doctors for as much as £300 plus an hour. You just have to hire in other doctors and nurses to cover their work, because nothing can stop. The NHS is a rolling stone; it can't stop. Well, it would be catastrophic if it did. So they just have to pay loads more money. £50 million a day. Trump on the balcony at the White House with his wife and the Easter Bunny. Still just threatening Iran. Okay. His deadline runs out today, American time. The Sun, yeah. We saw the whole of the moon. There you go. So they've successfully, you know, reached that sort of altitude record, if you like. It's not quite an altitude record, but you know what I mean. They've gone further away from the Earth than any other humans have ever gone, including like Apollo 8 and Apollo 13 and stuff. So it's a new record. Okay, and they're sort of safely on their way back. Although I did say, didn't I, that the most dangerous part of the mission is re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere at 25,000 miles per hour. Fingers crossed they... Of course, fingers crossed they survive that, but a remarkable achievement if you believe NASA and space isn't fake, which, of course, I don't. There you go, the Telegraph, Trump, I will wipe out Iran tonight. He said he can do it all in, like, one night, in 4 hours, he said. Could hit all their bridges and power stations. Well, can't be all of their bridges, but all their power stations and a lot of their bridges in, like, 4 hours, or at least in one night. They've already got basically complete air superiority, haven't they? So, okay. In the Financial Times, Iran threatens crushing reprisals as Trump deadline on Hormuz looms. So, Iran have rejected, they are sort of rejecting Trump's threats and Trump's deadlines. They're just saying, no, we're not gonna crumble to any of that. Okay, more Dr. Strike. You see, it's all Trump, Artemis, and the NHS. It's almost surreal, that image. Is it just me? It's like something out of Idiocracy or something. It's just a bit surreal. Some sort of fever dream. Like, is that really what I'm seeing? You know. Okay. Yeah, they threatened to bomb Iran into the Stone Age. Okay, The Guardian, don't want, gross. Yeah, there we go. Trump says Iran, quote, can be taken out in one night, quote, as peace talks falter. Yeah, as I understand it, at the last moment, Iran offered some sort of deal, some sort of 10-point deal of their own, and the Americans sort of ruled that out immediately. It's just not good enough for them, it's not what they want. And so all efforts to try and stop the bombing have just failed at this point, haven't they? Okay, Artemis 2 break distance record. All right, the iPaper. UK will refuse Trump access to British bases for strikes on Iran's bridges. Trump threatens new strikes in Iran after deadline to open Strait of Hormuz passes tonight. Quote, they're going to have no bridges, no power plants. I mean complete demolition, end quote. That's obviously Mr. Trump's words. Complete demolition. Okay. I mean, normal people most affected then at that point. Will that help them rise up to remove the regime or cripple them further from being able to do that? Keir Starmer will reject any request from Trump to use RAF bases for infrastructure attacks. Okay. International diplomacy accelerates as Trump warns country, quote, can be taken out in one night, and that might be tomorrow night, i.e., because this went to print last night, so he means tonight. Again, to be clear. The night of Tuesday, the 7th. And Tehran rejects 45-day ceasefire plan from Pakistan. Pakistan have tried to be mediators in this, haven't they, in various ways, a couple of different times. Yeah, trying to get some sort of 45-day ceasefire going. Neither side seem particularly, well, aren't interested in that at this point. Economic pressure mounts as blockade increases price of global energy, food and medicine. Trump celebrates, quote, audacious rescue of US aviator from Iranian mountain crevice. We talked about that yesterday, didn't they? Hegseth likened him to a resurrection. Obviously, it was Easter weekend, wasn't it? Hegseth likened it to a resurrection. Well. Okay. The Metro. Ooh. Gross. The Metro goes something else entirely. Emergency bike fire saw. Those little electric bikes. And that they use batteries, lithium batteries, that can quite often just sort of start a fire, kind of explode a bit and start fires. And that's not all that rare, basically. especially cheap ones. It says, cheap lithium batteries brought online are blamed, as experts say more loss of life inevitable. Yeah, people die sometimes. Like, it'll start a house fire. Well, look, there's a picture right there. It can start a house fire and people die. Like, just in the last year or something, just in London, some people, a fair few people have died from fires caused by these things. Well, it's not like it's a nothing burger. It's not like it's a nothing story. People are losing their lives, but still, the Metro go with something completely different this morning. What do you know about that? Okay, the Star. Again, it was the same yesterday, wasn't it? The Star decided to talk all about the Grand National for some reason. Yeah, that's a female jockey. What's her name? Rachel Blackmore. She won, I believe, I don't really follow horse racing hardly at all. Very, very, very minimally. She won the Grand National once. I don't know if it was, it wasn't last year, I don't think. But she once won, the first female, I believe, to win the Grand National. And she's talking about how it was the best day of her life when that happened. That's the front page of the Star. That's what their editors decided was the most important thing to bring to you this morning. Not that the Middle East is about to kind of explode even further than it already has. Not that the NHS is crumbling before our very eyes. Nope. Not the greatest human achievement in over 50 years. Nope. The Grand National is going to happen at the weekend, and here's someone that won it once. All right. They're the front pages. They're the front pages. Thought we'd whip through them a bit. Probably go, if and when Rupert comes in, we'll go back through them again and ask him his thoughts and feelings and all that sort of thing. So, there we go. While we're still waiting, we'll have a quick look at some of the websites. Okay, as you can imagine, because it was only last night, the Artemis story dominates. Because it was just last night, it was about midnight, a little after midnight, British time that is, that it went round the dark side of the moon. And that 40-minute window of being out of contact. No direct line of sight with the Earth, so that out of radio contact. So that happened last night. And so even quite a lot of the different websites going with it. I mean, even Sky News, if we quickly have a look at Sky News, they're loving it. They love it, which is great. I mean, I love it. But they've got all, they're really going for it with all the coverage, which is great. Which is great. I mean, Artemis 4 is going to be the big one, isn't it? That's the big one. When they're going to land boots. That's the idea. Boots on the ground. I think it's 2028, I believe, is when that's slated for at the moment. That will truly be great, won't it? That will truly be historic. Because, of course, it's not happened in my lifetime. Most people watching this, the last boots on the ground was, 1972. So you'd have to be getting up there in years to remember that. To be old enough to have your memory kick in and it be 1972. So it'd be great. Hopefully it'll put to bed, hopefully, a lot of the people who think it's all fake. Hopefully you'll be able to show beyond any question of a doubt that it's sort of real. Okay, back to the news. Okay, again, the Trump thing. Trump threatens to take out in one night the Straits of Hormuz as the deadline looms. Clock ticks on Trump's Iran ultimatum with little sign of breakthrough. Well, there is no breakthrough. There is no breakthrough. So it looks like that's going to go ahead. It looks like the power stations and bridges of Iran are going to get blown to bits shortly, in less than 24 hours. The wireless festival boss defends Kanye West booking and asks people to forgive rapper. That's interesting, isn't it? I would have thought that the organisers, with there's a fair bit of pressure from everyone from Keir Starmer to Ed Davey to the board of British Jews, all piling pressure on him, the organisers of the wireless festival. You would have thought he'd probably just capitulate and said, "Okay, yeah, we're gonna cut Kanye." But he's not. He's defending him at this point, at least. At this point, at least. That's quite interesting to me. Okay, let's have a look at the ITV news. I think there's something quite interesting in here. Oh, Kanye, again. Legal right to perform in UK. Again, it's getting into the weeds a bit of whether there's sort of a legal basis to prevent him from coming into the country, because in Britain, we do just prevent people from coming into the country quite often if we just don't like them. Like, there was that Dutch right-wing influencer, Eva... I can never pronounce her surname. People in the online rights field will know who I mean. And she hasn't done anything wrong. She's just, like, right-leaning. And when she tried to come to Britain, she was just refused entry. They just told no. I can't remember the exact wording, but it was something like, you're a detriment to society or something. I'm paraphrasing, it wasn't those words, but it was something like, it's not in the interests of the nation for you to visit. And she's just a completely, completely harmless, normal person. She's just got slightly right of centre views. Nothing more than that. Nothing more than that. And yet, if you're like an actual, well, terrorist in some cases, actual terrorists, like members of Hamas or whatever, you can come here, live here, buy property here. The actual Ayatollah himself has got a London property portfolio, hasn't he? Right? If you're an ISIS bride, some people in the mainstream media will argue in favour of you coming back. Right? Crazy. So anyway, in my point is, if the Home Office and the authorities do decide they want to just block you from coming into the country, they can. And do. And apparently, Kanye West's case is sort of in that stage. If the Home Office want to, you know, go full bore on this and just refuse him entry from the country, let alone being able to perform, then they could. I mean, that hangs in the balance right now. I suspect if they don't do that and he is allowed in the country, then he will be allowed legally to get on that stage at the Wireless Festival, if the Wireless Festival organisers themselves want him to. Which at this stage it looks like it will. So it's a bit of a furore, isn't it? Kanye West. The whole Kanye West story. Alright. Will Mr. Trump pull the trigger on full-blown Iran thing? Look, Trump threatens to obliterate Iran in one night as the Straits of Hormuz deadline looms. I guess they will. I've said before, haven't I, that the Donald and the Pentagon don't really bluff. I mean, some people, a lot of people, like on Twitter and things, that aren't a fan of the United States or Donald, they quite often poking fun at him in recent days or weeks, saying, oh, it was a 2-day deadline, now it's a 10-day deadline, now it's threat after threat after threat, it's all bluster. It's like getting sad, bro, you know? Like, they're not going to do anything, it's all bluster. I think that's like a profound misreading of the situation. Quite profound. If and when Trump gives the green light to Hegseth and the Pentagon and the Joint Chiefs, they will be doing stuff. I mean, how many times do they have to prove it over the last year or less? I do feel like there's not much Iran can do at this point. Even if in the next few hours, the next like 10 hours or something, 12 hours, Iran just did everything it possibly could to prevent this from happening. It's probably too late. It's probably already in the works, so to speak. If Iran said, okay, they're not going to. But if they said, okay, we completely give in, we completely capitulate, the Straits of Hormuz is open, everything you want, we'll do. I suspect it's too late for that now. The gears are in motion, and they're going to get their power stations and bridges blown up. To think it's just like an empty threat, and the Donald sort of toothless. I don't think so. But we'll see. Maybe there'll be a last moment stay of execution, so to speak. There'll be a last moment thing, like literally almost an hour to go from Trump's 8 p.m. Eastern deadline. He said, oh, okay, we have reached a deal. We don't have to do this. We'll see how it goes. Producers, have we heard from Mr. Lowe at all?
No.
Oh. It's a shame. anyone was hoping for that, you just have to wait a bit longer. Hopefully he arrives. I guess he might not. We'll get him another day if he doesn't come on. Hopefully. Fingers crossed anyway. All right, the Daily Mail. I thought this was an interesting story. Here. Reform will block visas from all countries demanding slavery reparations from Britain. Or will they? That feels like a classic bit of red meat to me. I don't know if that's true. Classic bit of red meat. Let's have a quick read of this, in fact. There you go. Reform UK will block visas from all countries demanding slavery reparations from Britain. I doubt that. I kind of doubt it. I mean, they do say things and then don't do it, don't they? They have lied, in fact, haven't they? Didn't they lie and Zia Yusuf lie about Rupert Lowe and his threat to Zia Yusuf's safety? All right, let's have a quick read. Reform will block visa requests from any country that demands reparations from the UK should they win the next election, the party announced yesterday. Home Affairs spokesman Zia Yusuf claimed such nations ignore huge sacrifice the UK had made to ban slavery. Yeah, the William Wilberforce and the whole movement of abolitionism. Yeah. Meanwhile, countries that are trying to get money out of us still have slavery to this day. The irony of that. Like Nigeria. Nigeria wants us to pay them reparations, even though there's modern day slavery in that country to this day. But we owe them reparations now. How make that make sense, you know? All right. A bunch of the countries. Oh, it says here that, you know, Zia Yusuf makes the point. Sometimes Zia Yusuf does say base things. It's whether you really believe that they really mean it, though, don't they? It's one thing to say something that sounds based. It's another thing to actually do it if and when you ever got real power. Well, Labour, Tory and Labour, have given 3.8 million visas to nationals from these countries that have asked for reparations over the last 2 decades. It will be loads more than that. That's an insane number anyway, but it'll be loads more than that. And something in the order of £6.6 billion in foreign aid. Okay. Countries like, well, the African Union, the whole African Union, which is a block of 55 member states. Just as a block, 55 African countries, GIBS. You owe us Gibbs. Even though there's tons of slavery in your countries today, we went through the abolitionist movement in the late 18th century, very early 19th century, well over 200 years ago. We used the Royal Navy to police the oceans around the world in various ways to try and stamp out slavery. We've done more than any other nation, perhaps in the history of the world, to combat slavery. And you guys have still got slavery, but we owe you money, do we? All right. Yeah. Right. If you say so. £18 trillion. £18 trillion. We what an absurd number that is. Absurd. Truly, truly meaningless figure. I mean, let's have a quick look at that. I've got a page here. Yeah, I don't know if you can see that. It's quite small. But here's a list of the UN nations and what they voted on that UN resolution about slavery. You can see there, the green ones. They voted for reparations, slavery reparations. Red ones voted against and the yellow ones abstained. So like Argentina, Israel and the United States voted against it. And a fair few abstained. The United Kingdom abstained, didn't we? Yeah, we just abstained. So you can see the yellows there. A fair few abstained. But loads of countries, loads of them, voted for Gibbs. And you know which ones they are. It's quite simple which ones they are. Just Gibbs. And I don't think Reform are saying, I don't think Zia Yusuf and Nigel and Reform are saying That they're going to block visas from every single one of these countries. That's not what they're saying, because not every single one of these countries has formally asked for reparations. Because that's what Reform are saying, that it's just the countries that have formally requested reparations, which isn't every single one of these. But nonetheless, it's quite a lot of these, though. It's vast swathes of the world, dozens and dozens and dozens of countries. Well, like the African bloc, that's 55 countries. Boom, right there. So if they did, if Reform formed the next government, and they did actually do this, they did actually just block, what, just 100% block, not one more visa from today, from all those countries. If they did it, I don't believe they will. But if they did, great. I'll be up for that. That'd be nice. Yeah. Then start looking at deporting foreign nationals that are currently in the country from those places as well. That would be nice, wouldn't it? All right. What else have we got? Was there anything in the Express? Andrew Mountbatten wins a Saxe Coburg Gotha. His downfall is utterly depressing. It is a bit, isn't it? It's a bit. I've never liked Andrew. No one's really ever liked Andrew. But it's just, it is a bit like sad and depressing now. Not that he's got any sympathy from me. He doesn't deserve any sympathy. He did think he could do anything, didn't he? Almost. He thought he could get away with almost anything endlessly, never have to answer for himself. So the hubris is nice, and yet still sort of depressing. Oh, has anyone out there got Andrew fatigue? Andrew and Mandy fatigue, Epstein fatigue. Not that that's any sort of expression of let's move on and forget about it. The opposite. I wrote an article on Lotus Eaters saying I'll never forget about it. Never. Never, ever, ever. This is one of those things, like, for me, anyway, like the JFK assassination, what really, really happened on the morning of 9/11, 2001, and the Epstein affair. I'll never, ever let it go. I was saying that, I wrote that article at a point in time, well, like 2-3 years ago, when there wasn't even anything on the horizon like the Epstein Transparency Act, people being held to account for their involvement in the Epstein thing. That wasn't even on the horizon. And I wrote an article saying, I'll never forget this. I'll never let it go. Intermittently, from time to time, when it's totally not in the news cycle, I'm just going to bring up Epstein stuff. Nonetheless, bit of Andy fatigue. He'll probably never have to truly, truly answer for it. He'll never sort of go to America and answer questions in front of the Senate or the Congress or anything. I'm sure he'll never do that unless he's legally compelled to, and then he'll fight that as hard as he possibly can. It's always been his sort of personal policy, hasn't it, to just completely and utterly refuse to answer any real questions about it. There's that one car crash interview, wasn't there, but he got his fingers burnt there. He realised, well, I'm not doing that again. I'll just stay silent until my dying day. If I'm not legally compelled to say anything, it's the only real defence. Look, crazy leftist globalist Joanna Lumley was targeted by motorbike thugs who tried to steal her car. Probably won't change her mind, will it, about immigration and things? Almost certainly not. She's a lovey to the core. Too late, 79 years old now, too late to change her mind or world views on anything. There you go, there's that tallest bridge that got blown up the other day. We'll probably have lots more images of that in the next 24 hours, 36 hours, 48 hours. Loads more bridges exactly like this getting blown to pieces. Alright. Okay. What else have we got? Oh yeah, just more. Raving mad, youths clash with riot cops after 2K descended on quiet village for illegal rave. Okay. Are you taking my mouse? Okay. My producers, I've got two producers this morning, have taken control of my mouse. So hopefully that heralds Mr. Lowe coming on. Does it? Little Harry, talk to me. What's going on? Yeah? Oh, okay. The honourable member for Great Yarmouth is just joining us as we speak. So hold tight. Hold tight with that. Yeah, on the Bow Show, this is literally the first guest. So little Harry, the producer, you know, has got one or two technical things. So I can see Mr. Lowe on my screen here, so hopefully any moment. All right. Good. Well, you let me know. Oh, there we go. There he is. Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you very well. I've been able to hear you for a while now, but oh. you couldn't hear me, I don't think.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Rupert Lowe, MP, how are you? This is the first time we've ever spoken, other than a quick handshake and a quick hello in the office. This is the first time I've had a chance to actually talk to you. So thank you for your time. Really appreciate it. Being the first guest, the inaugural guest on Breakfast with Beau. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
No, that's very, very good to come on. Is Carl joining us as well? Or is it just the two of us?
No, it's just the two of us. Carl doesn't come into the office till usually gone 9 a.m. So,
Oh, well, he works Jen's house. Is that, that's it, yeah. Carl, is it?
Yeah. There's no shade. Cole's one of the hardest working, if not the hardest working person at Loadseater, so let's get that clear. But, yeah, once again, so one of the first things I wanted to say to you is thanks for coming on, because here at Loadseaters, we're more than happy to speak to you. I mean, personally speaking, it's an honour and a pleasure, but a lot of the corporate legacy mainstream media don't seem all that interested, even GB News, don't seem all that interested in talking to you, at least at the moment. Tell us a bit about that.
Until Nigel Farage politically assassinated me along with Lee Anderson and Mohammed Ziauddin Yusuf, or Ziauddin Yusuf, basically just over a year ago now. And since then, it's sort of dried up. And I think really Restore Britain, growing as it has, it's quite extraordinary that a media that sets itself up as effectively independent and impartial, particularly the BBC, which, as you know, is a state monopoly. They've gradually sort of reduced the amount that they consult or ask me on, which I find extraordinary, because we are probably the fastest growing political party now in history. And our membership continues to grow every day. I think people can see the gravity of the situation. And I'm concluding, as a result of their sort of apparent fear of us, that we are the people and they are the establishment, who is effectively trying to retain power, even though they have run the country into the ground over the last 30 or 40 years. So I think they've made bad decisions. I think they have not put their own people at the top of the agenda. And we now, I think all of us can see quite how bad it's gone wrong. And look, I mean, we're a different party. I don't plead for people's votes. I say we are here. If you agree that Britain needs to be restored, then vote for us. But we are not like politicians who are craving power. We are an option which people can vote for if they agree with us that things need radical change. And if we attain power, there will be radical change, and the change basically will be that we will put the British people at the top of the agenda, and we will protect their interests in every possible way we can.
Great. I mean, amazing. For anyone who might not know, just most people that are watching this will probably know all about it, but just for perhaps people that do end up clicking on this video that might not know, you've started your own party, Restore, which is now polling. No, I've seen
it's called Restore Britain.
And, right. And
if you want the history, I was a Reform MP until, as I say, for some extraordinary reason, they tried to politically or did try to politically assassinate me and send me to prison, which is unethical to say the least, given that I've done nothing to even vaguely merit that. And in fact, Nigel Farage told us the truth, which is they didn't like my opinions on mass deportation, which is why they allegedly got rid of me. Then after I'd been cleared, which I knew I would be because I hadn't done anything illegal, I set up a movement because I wanted to unite people. and it was called Restore Britain. And then we have turned Restore Britain now into a political party, and we have electoral commission approval. So we are now a fully fledged party. We are not running in all of the local elections. We're running in Great Yarmouth, in the county council elections, where we're running under the flag of Great Yarmouth First, because we wanted to ensure we had an electorally approved body, which was approved before Restore Britain was approved. So the reason we're running in Restore in Great Yarmouth First is because that was the body that effectively got approval first. So we want to show the model that we can win both bottom up and top down, and we want to start with the county council elections in Great Yarmouth, where there are 9 seats. We're hoping to win them all. There's also a borough council by-election as a result of somebody sadly dying, which we hope to win too, which by quirk of fate will give us the casting vote on the borough council. So we, as you probably know, we've been very active on all the social media platforms. And what we're now doing is setting up branches across the country. We are early in that process, but people have been incredibly enthusiastic, and I think there are a lot of patriots who can see quite what a bad state the country is in, and quite how necessary it is for the British people to actually now take control of the situation, and take back their country from people who arguably have lost sight of who they represent.
And at the next general
And
election, you do intend to stand in everywhere. It's as.
we will stand across the country, and we're going to start obviously prioritizing seats where we think we will win, which is obviously the coastal seats and the rural seats. After what Labour's done to the rural economy and to small businesses, I think they've got very little hope in those areas. Obviously, their historic strongholds are in the sort of big conurbations. But again, they have made some very bad decisions over many, many years. And one of the things I've been reading over the weekend is our rape gang report, which is here. That's the draft report of our rape gang inquiry, which we crowdfunded, which, frankly, when that is published, I don't really see how any self-respecting citizen can ever vote for Labour again. So Labour has an awful lot of blood on their hands as far as that is concerned. And arguably, the Tories played a sort of Pontius Pilate type role, in that they didn't do what they should have done when they had the ability to do it. So this cancer was allowed to grow within the gut of Britain, and we have to deal with it before it metastasizes. So that's really where we are. And I'm here if people think that we need change, and we will engineer that change. I've got quite a lot of experience, not only in business but in the City of London, and in many other things I've done over my life. And I think we need to have a radical plan to return power to the people, to cut the size of the state, to deregulate, and to allow people to find their own level, make their own relationships, and not have them distorted by a state which thinks it is omnipotent and its job is to tell people how to live their lives. And we only have to look at what happened during COVID to see that they're capable of making extremely bad decisions that are not in the interests of anybody in this country.
I mean, already polling at something like 8%, some polls will have it. I feel like it's some sort of maybe perfect storm is a bit hyperbolic, but the Labour are historically unpopular. Tories already massively a shadow of a shadow of what they once were. Reform even not polling massively high, between 20 and 30, bit, and that's being generous. And it feels like to me, what do you think about this? That you see the amount of apathy. The amount of the turnout in general elections is so low that there's so many people that feel disenchanted, disenfranchised. I think that people are screaming out for a party like Restore Britain, that it puts the native people first. It doesn't seem like too much to ask, but it sort of is
Well,
if Restore Britain
I think you're
are the
asking,
main option on that.
In answer to your question, the Tories and
I can't
Labour
hear him,
have had
Harry.
a
Yeah,
long,
Harry.
they've had a long play. They've had a long play with the toy set, and they haven't done very well. Reform, I think, is the establishment challenger. And as you say, they are now coming down in the polls. My issue with Reform is they don't have a plan, and they didn't have a plan. Nigel, by his own admission, says he doesn't do detail. And as we can see, that shows through in the way in which the party is structured. The Lib Dems, I mean, I can't really take them seriously. Ed Davey plays his stunts and
No.
messes around, but he's a bit of a
Laughable.
farce. And then, frankly, how
Laughable.
anyone can vote for the Green Party. I saw Zach Polanski up on a stage dancing with some bloke in a gimp outfit, holding his crutch. And sort of jiving along to the crowd. I mean, quite how anyone other than a complete lunatic could think that they are the road to restoration. I'm not quite sure, but maybe I have to respect the fact that there are people out there who probably don't look at life in the same way as I do. But if that didn't put you off, then I don't know what will.
Yeah, no, there's quite a lot of sick, degenerate lefties in this country, Rupert, I'm afraid, isn't there? Unfortunately, let's be perfectly honest about it. I wonder if this morning I would love to get just your take on a couple of things because it would be great to just flesh out some of your thoughts and feelings and your takes on almost day-to-day things. So, for example, in the news this morning, it's mainly Donald Trump, so a bit of foreign policy, obviously the Artemis thing. Be nice to know just your thoughts and feelings on that. And, well, health policy, right? This doctor strike. Can we start with that? A little bit about health policy. If you were the Prime Minister, if you found yourself Prime Minister, what would you do about the British Medical Association and these doctors and their strikes? Well, and the NHS in general? I mean, what's your grand meta plan for dealing with that whole car crash of a thing?
Well, I think you have to look at the genesis of the National Health Service. And as you know, like the BBC, it is a state monopoly. And all monopolies in the end become inefficient and malign. And I think that applies to the NHS. Now, obviously, the intent of the NH for the NHS was a benevolent sort of structure to provide healthcare for the entire country. But what it's become is a grossly inefficient, politicized, arguably malign organization that fails at almost everything it tries to do. And what you're actually seeing is you're seeing it fail, but its failures result either in the death of people with cancer, in which case that problem goes away, or it results in people basically ending up having to pay for their own treatment. Because the NHS is so inefficient that the waiting lists are so long, and people in the end find they can't live with the kind of discomfort that they get from a hip that's gone or a knee that's gone or other sort of elective surgeries that need to be done in order to relieve pain and allow people to live their lives properly. So in the end, what happens is effectively by doing nothing, what they're doing is collecting vast amounts of national insurance from employers, particularly now, as a result of what Rachel Reeves did at the last budget. And you know, she put a huge further tax on jobs. The employees pay a little bit. But at the end of the day, what is the answer for the NHS? Well, the answer is radical overhaul. And I'm intent, first of all, in dealing with the key issues at the top of the tree. The NHS is a big issue. I think it's got a very bad approach to the way in which it runs itself, and that needs to be radically changed. But rather than shooting from the hip, I think what we've got to do is gain power, put in the necessary reforms at the top of top level, which we are showing people what we would do with immigration. We've written a mass deportation paper which explains the problems that we've currently got, and the solutions that we see, so people can actually look and debate that. We're doing the same for an economic policy. We're doing the same for our defence and borders policy. We've got a paper on coming out on student debt, which I think is another big problem that needs to be dealt with. And so I mean, answer your question. I'm not going to give a glib response, but what I do think is the NHS is broken. And And it's a fraud. I'm afraid that it doesn't do what it says it should be doing. It is not a health service. It's failing to deliver what it should be delivering, and it's wasting vast amounts of taxpayers' money.
Not fit for purpose. I mean, as you say, the genesis of it, the late 1940s, right? Wasn't it Clement Attlee? So we just don't live in that world anymore in many, many different ways, including, of course, the amount of immigration that has come to this country. Millions and millions, tens of millions of extra people. So well, let's just get straight to that then, because as I think quite rightly you say, many, many, many other policy questions are downstream of immigration. And you've said in the video you started when you started the party, you said millions must go, and you've said similar things before. So in the news this morning, Reform have said that they would like to stop all visas from any countries that formally asked for reparations, for example. But one of the criticisms that some people that are not on the Restore Britain bandwagon have said that there's not a great deal of difference between yours and Nigel's immigration policy. I think that's absolutely not true. But can you tell us where there's clear light between you and Nigel on immigration? Tell
Well,
us.
I think you've only got to watch Nigel's interviews and my interviews, and there's a
He's gone
huge
quiet
difference
again, Harry.
between us.
Sorry? Harry? Harry? Sorry, Rupert. Go ahead.
Are you all right now?
Slight technical issue. Okay. Okay, they've got a thumbs up.
You all right now?
Yes, we're good now. Thank you.
You've only got to look at the difference between my interviews and Nigel's interviews to see there is a complete difference. And as I just said to you, the reason Nigel gave publicly the other day for
Right.
removing
Yeah.
the was that my views on immigration were not acceptable, and that my he actually misquoted me. I've never said we should deport vast whole communities of British passport holders. I've never said that. What I've said is we should start with the people arriving illegally, and we should detain and deport them. We should then find the people living here illegally, and we should detain and deport them. Illegal means illegal in my book. And if you or I do something illegal, we end up in court, which is what happens when you break the law. And illegal means breaking the law. And then I said I would turn my attention to, after I deported the 10,500 foreign criminals in our prisons, I would turn my attention to those people who are living here, who've come here, and who have effectively been welcomed here, who are effectively not contributing to Britain, who are claiming benefits, and who are a cost to the British taxpayer. And I will turn my attention to them, and rather in the same way that Denmark and Sweden are doing it now, having pursued very misguided policies in 2015, they are actually encouraging people to leave the country who are not making a contribution, and hoping to return places like Malmo, which was extremely safe and very civilized. It's now become one of the crime centers of Europe. And they are hoping, obviously, to restore that to the way it was. And that means basically getting rid of people who aren't contributing and who don't integrate and don't share the view that our culture is the way they want to live their life. And I'm quite straightforward in my view. If you don't like our culture and you don't like the fact that we live in a Christian country, then go and live somewhere else. Don't darken our doorstep. Why do you need to do that? There can't be a reason other than a bad reason for living here if you don't agree with the way in which we live our lives and the culture that we have built up around us.
Okay, so those few different types of people you've described there would add up to millions, I would have thought. But
Well,
some of those then.
it's in our document. We've actually documented how many people we think can be removed from the country. Without even starting to encourage people to leave in the way in which Sweden and Denmark are doing. It's all in the document. Have you read the document? If you read the document, I'm very happy to answer any questions on that. I mean, we, We're it took us a long time. It's been beautifully written. It's extremely clear. We tell people which laws need to be amended or repealed, and we talk about creating effectively an unfriendly environment, making it difficult for people to come here unless there's a reason for them coming here to contribute to the British economy. I mean, I'm not against targeted immigration, which is going to benefit Britain. But, you know, that is in very small quantities, and it's people who want to come here, who want to integrate, and who want to contribute. I mean, looking at today, the Labour Party, I think the most important thing that's happened, and we had a go at Rachel Reeves over the weekend, I did a little clip yesterday on it, obviously this raising of the two-child benefit cap is, in my view, lunacy. You know, the country can't afford it. She is taxing small businesses and farms with inheritance tax, which will ultimately force a lot of them out of business. The whole point of having a tax-free inheritance approach to small businesses and farms is that they're capital hungry and very often not necessarily profit rich. But what you need is continuity and investment in order to drive that. So that's the backbone of Britain. And what Labour's doing is breaking the backbone of Britain in order to effectively tax and destroy the hard-working, decent people of Middle England and fund the indolent who aren't working, who choose to have lots of children that they can't afford to keep. And very often, those are foreigners who come here. So the whole policy is complete lunacy. But Starmer and his front bench, as you know, are extremely inexperienced when it comes to understanding very much, because none of them have done very much other than climb their way up the greasy political pole. And, you know, they just didn't have the stomach to fight their rather left-wing backbenchers who were threatening to revolt. And as a result, they caved in. So, again, that's something which is just not affordable. Britain's economy is no longer what it used to be. It's not generating huge amounts of wealth. And very often, if you want to have welfare, you have to have a vibrant economy to pay for it. You can't have the welfare without generating the wealth through hard work. And we're not doing that at the moment. We're not investing long term. We aren't, like Victorian Britain, creating vast wealth. We are living on our reputation, and that can't go on forever.
So when you talk about a policy of re-migration, just explicitly talking about mass re-migration, how do you feel when you see scenes in Parliament when people talk about just merely the small boat crisis, and the other side, or quite often many, many members, just immediately subvert that conversation into, not only is that not really a problem, but we need more safe and legal routes. You hear that over and over again. Try and start a conversation about immigration and you just get, no, more safe and legal routes. What do you think when you see and hear that dialogue, the dynamic of that?
Well, I think I've set out my view. I will, you know, illegal immigration needs to be stopped. Right. You know, people talk about asylum seekers. They're not asylum seekers. They're economic migrants. And they're economic migrants who aren't going to contribute economically. And they're coming here illegally. That's the most important thing. If you want to come and live here, apply to come and live here legally and justify coming here. And then when you get here, contribute and integrate. If you're not going to do that, then don't come. So, I mean, I'm not really interested in safe routes. I'm interested in protecting our borders and ensuring that those people who come here because they want to be here and they want to contribute. They respect our history and our culture. And actually, they agree with the way in which we live our lives. And if they don't bother to come. Stay where you are.
Okay, fine. Okay, couple more things, if I might, just because it's in the news today. Just quickly, I'd like to just get your thoughts and feelings on a couple of other different things. I mean, when you see the Artemis 2 mission going around the moon, what are your thoughts and feelings when you see something like that?
Well, I remember the first moon landing, which
really,
was historic.
Really, were you a child? You must have been young.
I'm 68 now, so yes, of course I was I was probably, what, 10 or 11 years old. So, yeah, I mean, it was huge news. We didn't have all the digital platforms we've got now. People used to huddle around the television, and it was massive news. So it's taken a long time to do this again. But look, I mean, for man to travel the farthest away from Earth that we've ever traveled, obviously, is in itself an exciting thing. I mean, there are many other things that are arguably more important going on in the world at the moment, but of course it's something to celebrate and be excited about. But have I been huddled around the television like I was in the 60s? No, I haven't.
It's not quite as amazing as actual boots on the ground, but you say it segues nicely into the next question I wanted to ask you then about that there's other things going on in the world. A little bit about foreign policy then, if I may, little bit with Trump and Iran. You know, it's the biggest thing going on at the moment. Again, if you found yourself in power, had you been in power right now, if you'd been Prime Minister right now, for example, how would you have dealt with it? Would you have done something similar to how Starmer's dealing with it? What are your thoughts and feelings just about what's going down in the Middle East at the moment, Mr. Trump's war?
Well, I think in the end, I've said on record that I would put the interests of Britain at the top of the agenda, and I think it's fair to say that Britain, whilst we have always played and should play a supporting role in what I call the Anglo-Saxon hegemony, which is effectively they're the freedom-loving nations of the world. So obviously, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, Britain, and the USA. The people who effectively ensured that Europe was free from authoritarian dictatorship, and who has played a huge part in setting up NATO and policing the world. But the truth is, we haven't, as I say, got an economy that can fund our own health service. We haven't got an economy that can fund the welfare we're chucking around at the moment. We've been relying on quantitative easing now for far too long. And I think we have to be real about the capability of our army, our navy, and our air force. So obviously, within that, there's only one country that's capable of doing what Trump is doing in Iran right now, and that is the USA. Clearly, we should obviously support where it's necessary. But I think what we have to do is we have to put Britain's interests at the top of the agenda. And I think there's a lot of rebuilding to be done in Britain. There's a lot of reality that needs to flow back through the veins of the country, and we need to stop deluding ourselves that we still have this vast amount of Victorian wealth, which has carried us through over the last 100 years, really. I mean, we built up the most massive wealth, which has now dissipated. And we're not creating very much wealth now. So the answer to your question is obviously global peace and global security is incredibly important, and we should ensure that we play a role in that. But I think in answer to your question, we've got an awful lot to do to concentrate on our own knitting before we start worrying about what's going on in other parts of the world. We should start by ensuring that we have a country that's at peace with itself, that is prosperous, that is protecting the interests of its citizens, rather than going to wage global warfare, which we are certainly not equipped to fight. America is equipped to fight it. She has all the resources. She's invested in her armed forces, and she has a structure to do it. We don't. And the world has relied on the US to protect freedom. Since the war. Indeed, we relied on America to win both the First World War and the Second World War. Without her economy and without her support, Woodrow Wilson in the First World War and obviously Roosevelt in the Second World War after Pearl Harbor, we effectively we've relied on them, and we obviously, as I think people have said in the past, we are their oldest ally, and so we should be. But for the fact arguably, we messed it up. America would still be part of the UK. Unfortunately, historically, you can't undo those things which we did badly in the past. So look, I mean, we need to play our part. We need to support. We have bases in places that are necessary. Those should be available. Are we in a position to start getting involved and hurling munitions around the world? Probably not.
Okay, yeah. If only we'd won the War of 1812, eh, Rupert? How things might have been different. Well, quickly then, just to build on that, would you increase military spending then, if it were up to you?
I would, yes. I think Donald Trump's quite right. Britain and Europe, particularly Europe, has not invested sufficiently in defence. We have relied on the US, and I think he makes a very good point when he says everybody should be contributing to global security. We, as it happens, have actually spent a lot more than Germany and other sort of countries in Europe. But yeah, I think we should be building up. I think we should be building up our armed forces. We should be building up our border control, building up our defenses generally. And as you know, from war comes innovation. And I think we should be learning as much as we possibly can from what's been going on in Ukraine. Who would have thought that before the Ukraine war, and which is the large reason why Russia didn't invade Ukraine, was that actually warfare has changed. So it is now not just about sort of lines of tanks. Tanks can now very easily be destroyed by drones. So I mean, historically, innovation comes from war, sadly. And we should be learning from that and then developing our own defence with a view to, as I say, protecting the interests of the British people. But you have to be taken seriously, and you have to make people know that if you need to, you will defend your borders, you will defend your country, you will defend your heritage and your history. And you can't do that if you haven't invested in your armed forces.
Good point. Good, great point. One other thing. I appreciate all your time, and I don't want to take up your whole morning. But if I could ask one more question before we go, you said a little moment ago, a grander zoomed out meta point. You mentioned about a smaller state. So this is sort of an overview sort of question, but you talked about a smaller state. I'm for that. I've got some mild libertarian type leanings. I would like to see a smaller state. So you're talking about less spending, less taxing, less spending. Talk to me a little bit about your thoughts and feelings about that.
Well, if you read the Austrian school economist, von Mises and Hayek, the state makes bad decisions, the individual makes good decisions. And also, you find the state distorts human relationships, which is what it's doing all the time. And humans, on the whole, aren't equal. I think it was Solzhenitsyn who said, people are born with different capabilities. If they're equal, they're not free. And if they're free, they're not equal. And I think in a nutshell, he's absolutely right. Because humans are different. They have different skills, they have different viewpoints, and they have different abilities. And you have to respect the fact that people are different. The state doesn't do that. The state tries to shoehorn everybody into one structure, which is indeed what it's doing if you look at making tax digital, which is most people won't know about that. But it's again just an excuse to try and shoehorn everybody into a structure which will allow the state to effectively dictate and control, which is not what we want. So the digital revolution's been great for freeing people, but it's equally, I think, a danger in terms of it can be used to gate people in and control them. So no, I'm a great sort of Austrian school economist. I like low taxes, small state, and I like people to interface with each other and find their own level. And you tend to find that when that happens, probably like me, there are many people who are more intelligent and more able than I am, and I sort of know who they are. There are many people who are less able and less intelligent than me, and I sort of know who they are. And everybody finds their own level, and the whole thing works. Whereas if you end up with a sort of statist approach, I mean, just look at the front bench of the Labour Party. None of them are fit or capable to be running this country. They have no experience other than a bit of political gerrymandering, either at first probably usually at council level, then followed by political level. So no, I think the Fabian Society plays a big, it runs deep through the Labour Party, as you probably know. No, I like low taxes, simple taxes, as Thomas Jefferson said. Everybody should know exactly how much they're paying, and tax should be through the payroll, i.e., through income tax, so that you and I know exactly what we're paying and what we're getting for it. But instead, George Osborne has introduced taxes on, stealth taxes on insurance. He doesn't index various sort of levels, which again are stealth taxes. You've got stealth taxes literally everywhere, and that is dishonest. So what you need is honest taxation, which is transparent taxation, and you need it to be as low as possible and allow people to keep and spend their own money and find their own level with each other. And then you get long-term investment, you get basically a country which operates properly. It's when you have statism and central planning, such as you had in the USSR, that you get misallocation of capital. You get investment in the wrong things at the wrong time. I mean, just look at COVID. Just look at the appalling decisions that were made during COVID.
Harry, can you hear that? Sorry, Rupert, one moment. Harry, is that? Sorry, it's coming through. I can't hear him properly at this moment. I can't hear you either. What just happened? I can't hear you either. Okay, sorry, Rupert. A technical issue again. I don't know why the mics are
Yeah,
coming
did
through
you capture
okay,
that?
but.
If you captured that, great. So that there you are. There's your answer.
Guys, okay. Well, that was getting towards the end of it anyway. So, Rupert, I'm dreadfully sorry about that. Slight technical issue. I couldn't hear the last few moments of you speaking, and I can't hear my producers either at the moment. So, a technical issue. I'm very, very sorry about that.
Well, hopefully they captured it, did they? I don't know.
Guys, I can't hear him. All right. Well, we'll let you go, Rupert. Thank you anyway.
All
I
right, well,
very, very much hope to have you back at some point if we can, and we'll iron out all those
thanks for having
technical
me on.
issues. All right.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you. What a shame there, the last few moments of the honourable member for Great Yarmouth, Mr. Lowe MP. We'll have to iron out all those technical issues. What a shame there. But okay. All right. So a little bit of Obi-Wan Kenobi there. Can't say further than that. Breakfast with Bo. Colloquially known as the Bo Show. Hopefully we'll have him back another time. Fingers crossed. We're going to have other guests as well. We've got a guest coming in on Friday, physically. Another guest coming in on Friday, going to sit with me, a bit like the podcast, the main afternoon podcast. And going forward, not every single day, nothing like every single day, but we'll get a whole bunch of guests in over the time. And as I say, very much hopeful that that's not the last time I ever get to chat to Mr. Lowe. All right, good. Shall we move on then? Because it's already 9:10. Shall we have a quick look at this day in history? Because I love doing that. You guys like me doing that. And then we'll do the Rumble Rants and the Super Chats. All right, so down through the centuries on this day, what happened of note? I like this segment to end the show with. All right, the 7th of April on this day, in 30 AD, that would be. So the age of what? Tiberius, isn't it? Tiberius would have been Roman emperor, I believe. Scholars estimate for the crucifixion of Jesus by Roman troops in Jerusalem. They think it might have been April the 3rd in the year 30 AD. They argue, just to say, before you go crazy in the chat, there's loads of argument about that. The historicity of Christ, exactly when it would have been. If he was born in the age of Augustus and died, executed in the age of Tiberius. You'll find people saying, no, it's 33 AD. Some people say, no, that couldn't be right. It must be 32 AD. Anyway, on this website, on this day in history, they're saying it's 30 AD. I've seen it various different dates. Okay, on this day in 529, again AD, the first draft of the Corpus Juris Civilis, or otherwise known as the Justinian Code, is first issued in the Byzantine Empire, the Eastern Roman Empire. Talked all about Justinian before, haven't I, a number of times? I haven't got content all about Justinian, Harry? On Epochs, my history theme show behind the paywall on lotusetus.com. Consider signing up for as little as bronze tier membership, as little as £5 a month. You want long form content of me talking all about Justinian the First? Oh yeah, it's there. Hours of it. Yeah, he decided he'd have to gather together all the a code of laws, all the laws. What was it a Trebonian, one of his chancellors, well not a chancellor, but one of his senior ministers, Trebonian, was charged with making the complete mess that was Byzantine law into one sort of code. And it's still used as a basis for common law in all sorts of ways. To this day, I mean. You know, like Henry II or Napoleon borrow heavily from it. So, really important thing if you're interested in the history of sort of law. Okay, on this day, 1948, the World Health Organization is formed by the United Nations. How'd that work out for everyone? It didn't get completely subverted and try and put the whole world under house arrest, no? The World Health Organization. When Trump left the World Health Organization, I thought that was great. Funny and great. And overdue. Okay. On this day in 1954, US President Dwight D. Eisenhower, in a news conference, is the first to voice fear of a domino effect of communism in Indochina. You know, the idea that if this one country falls, this one domino, like Vietnam, French Indochina, if that falls to communism, then the next thing will be Thailand, and the next thing will be, and in the end, the whole of Southeast Asia will, like dominoes, will fall to communism. Okay. Many historians, liberal historians since, have completely ridiculed that entire concept. I don't think that's necessarily... Remember, it's the Cold War. Remember, the Soviets were actively, proactively, trying to flip any countries they could to their side of the equation. Not that America weren't trying to do that as well. So I don't think the domino effect was complete paranoid nonsense at all. Anyway, historians argue about that, and I'm sure we'll continue to. On this day, 1968, riots continue in over 100 US cities following the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. There you go, and some recent files were released in the last year or two, wasn't it, about possible things that went on, which we've only just found out about, concerning the murder of Martin Luther King. Okay, and on this day in 1969, the internet's symbolic birth date. 1969, that's very early on. Was it like one of the first networks ever or something? But okay, there's a few tidbits about on this day in history. Let's do our Rumble Rants and Super Chats. Harry, can you bring up on my screen the Rumble Rants and Super Chats? Okay, thank you very much. All right, Rumble Rants first. Always Rumble Rants first. Global church history in at number one. Every single day, almost without fail. Still. And still. In at number one. Global church history. He says, on this day, and he always gives us an extra on this day tidbit, doesn't he? On this day in 1141, Empress Matilda came to the throne. That's in Britain. She's the mother of Henry II, isn't she? That's the you've got the whole era of the anarchy between Empress Matilda, nominally Empress, and Stephen of Blois. Got long form content all about that on Epochs. And on my own history channel, History Bro, talking all about the anarchy, long-form content. Yeah, there was a civil war in the 12th century, basically a civil war, between Stephen of Blois and the Empress Matilda. Okay, because Henry I died and he only had a daughter, her, and people had been sworn to recognise her as like some sort of female king. Weird, but... And they said they would, and then the old king dies, and they don't, and there's rebellion. One of her, I think he's a cousin of hers, isn't he? Stephen of Blois. I think he's a cousin, and he thinks he can take the throne for himself. 20-odd years, is it? Is it as long as that? 20-odd years of just complete civil war and misery off the back of that. All right. So Global Church History says Empress Matilda came to the throne. Also, it's my little sister Anna's 20th birthday. Well, happy birthday, Anna. Anna Church History. Your surname is Church History. Sorry. Happy birthday, Anna. Happy 20th. To be 20 again. In some ways, I'm very, very glad I'm not 20. In various ways, the world, the way the world's going, that uphill climb of life. In other ways, would love to be 20 again, right? Would love it. Anyway, happy birthday, Anna. And she wanted to say she loves F1 and always loves hearing you talk about it. Oh, cool. Yeah, I love F1. They're at a hiatus at the moment, isn't it? I think there's like four, isn't it? Even a 5-week hiatus because there was supposed to be a Bahrain Grand Prix and a Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Both those have been cancelled. So we've got quite a few weeks without any F1 now. Anyway, most of the audience of the Bow Show don't like F1, so I have to keep it to a minimum. But I love it too. Good girl, Anna loves F1. Nice. Okay, 14 Barber says, morning all. Thank you to the next Prime Minister for coming on the only worthwhile breakfast show. Yeah, what are you going to do? Watch Jeremy Kyle? Come on, get real. Mike Graham. Don't watch Mike Graham. It's gross. I can't wait for the Artemis re-entry next. This has been a terrific mission thus far. Have you been to a WEC race? No, I haven't. I haven't. I've very rarely been to any races, actually personally, physically going there myself. Went to Brands Hatch once when I was like 12 or something. I never really attend races, watch loads on TV or on YouTube, loads, but hardly ever, if ever, go to these things. I'd like to. I'd really like to go to a British Grand Prix one day. That would be cool. The thing is, when you actually go to these things, the reality is you get a better view on TV. You stand there and unless you've got a very, very good vantage point, you stand there and they go vroom, 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 and that's it until they come around again and say, it's like going to a live concert. You're probably not going to get a great view of it, right? It's nice to be there in person, but seeing a professionally edited video is actually better in various ways. But anyway, now I'd like to go to the British Grand Prix if the weather was nice. If it's not one of the rainy ones, a really hot one, that'd be cool. Okay. Base Distance says, hold fast, you sons of Albion, all caps, exclamation mark. Yeah, great, nice. Hold. Stiff upper lip. It's not over yet. Nothing is. We've only just begun. Nothing's over. Nothing's over. Don't be a doomer. Don't be a doomer. Yes. Base Dissident. Nice. Thank you for the rumble rant. Fallen Firebird says, not sure if Mr. Lowe will be answering these, but if so, who is the figure in British history that inspires him the most politically? Or to you, Bo, if he isn't. Godspeed to you both. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. I can't speak for Rupert Lowe. In fact, I'd love to just ask him, just talk to him all about history. So he definitely knows his stuff, doesn't he? Definitely. I'd love to just sit down here. I did it with, Godders once, didn't I? Godfrey Bloom. I'd love to do that with Rupert Lowe. Sit down and just chat about history, not even politics. That'd be cool. That'd be great. People that inspire me most politically. God, there's quite a few. I don't know. All right, there's so many, I wouldn't even know. I mean, in recent times, Enoch Powell called it how he saw it, didn't he? Then there's loads of people throughout history. Someone like Pitt the Younger. Pitt the Younger, I think I haven't got long-form history theme content about Pitt the Younger. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. A few hours talking about Pitt the Younger, his career, his life. Robert Walpole was very, very influential. A great, great politician in various ways. Anyway, all right. Tomcat247 says, what does Mr. Lowe think of Heinleinianism? Like Heinlein, Robert Heinlein, right? The Starship Troopers and many other books. Well, if he ever comes back on, I can ask him some of these questions. If he ever comes back on, fingers crossed he will, maybe we'll put something out there on Twitter or on the website to maybe get you guys to throw questions in, because I haven't seen these until now. So sorry, I couldn't have asked him in real time. And we'll pick out some of the best ones, because that's a good question. It's a very good question. I'd love to ask him that. I wonder what he'd say. You say, what does he think of Heinleinianism? Say that 10 times fast. The vote and standing in Parliament only to ex-servicemen and 2+ terms for ethnically British mothers of 3 or more. Okay, yeah, a number of questions there. It'd be nice to ask him. It'd be interesting to ask him, wouldn't it? Perhaps next time. Hopefully next time. All right, they're the Rumble Rants. Harry, if you can bring up the Super Chats. Oh, actually, we did a poll, didn't we? Should I quickly tell you guys what we got on the poll? All right, today we had a poll. Loads of votes. So that's probably a record, isn't it? Knocking 2,500 votes on our poll today. I think that's got to be a Bo Show record. I don't remember it ever being as high as that. Nearly 2,500 votes. We asked you, do you want Trump to bomb Iran back to the Stone Age? Not whether you think he will, do you want him to? Okay. Yes, 30%. No, 52%, maybe 17%. And there you go. So the no's have it. The no's have it. 52%. Big chunk for you, though. Almost a third say yes. 17%, which is not negligible, go with maybe. But the no's have it. All right. Should we do the Super Chats then, the YouTube Super Chats? And what have we got here? All right. We got a fair few. Not an insane amount, but a fair few. All right, LJNV says, Bo, you magnificent man. Harry. Not my words. I'm not paying that dude to say that. It's not my alt account. Magnificent man. Thank you. Thank you, LJNV. Yeah. Question for Rupert. Sorry, it's too late, isn't it? Sorry. A lot of people are doing that, trying that. Sorry. We'll have to figure it out going forward. How to try and get some of your questions to him if we can. Okay, you say, question for Rupert. How would you change the education system? It's anti-white. Also, people can't afford homes. P.S. Rupert, do a live interview with Elon. Cheers from Oz. That would be cool, wouldn't it? To get it. I mean, amazingly cool to get Elon and Rupert on the same stream. Imagine that. Yeah. That'd be super cool. Yeah, there's so many questions you could ask someone like Rupert, though, isn't there? So many questions about, like, education policy or something. Endless questions. Right, if I could sit down, ideally, I'd like to sit down with Rupert Lowe for, like, a whole day, a whole afternoon, or even a morning session of 2, 3, 4 hours, have some lunch, sit down again for another 4 hours. There's just endless questions you would want to ask him, right? Well, that's the way I look at it. All right, next one, reasonably big one, Field Marshal Dawn Browning. Says, didn't you coin the phrase aim high, vote low? Bo, she's asking me. No, I can't claim it. I can't claim it. That distinction goes to one Mr. Thomas Rousell, otherwise known as Survive the Jive. I'll tell you the story of it, how it came about. It's crazy to see loads of people saying it, putting it in their bios, chanting it in real life on the street and stuff. On the day that Rupert Lowe made the party, or officially launched the party, like within an hour or two, or later that very same evening, I saw Tom Rousell, Survive the Jive, tweet it. And I retweeted it. So I did say it very early, but it wasn't mine. It wasn't mine. I can't claim it. I'm not going to claim it. He said it. Later, someone said to me, did I come up with that? And I said, no, I got it off Tom Rousell, Survive the Jive. And then I asked him, I then tweeted him. I was like, Tom, did you get it off someone else? And he was like, no, I made it up. So it's Survive the Jives. It's not mine. I would like to have claimed it. It's got such a ring to it, isn't it? Aim high, vote low. Aim high, I said Zoomers to Boomers. Aim high, vote low, millions must go, from Zoomers to Boomers. That's me, from Zoomers to Boomers, I added that bit, but okay. Aim high, vote low, it's just got a great, so pithy, isn't it? So succinct, perfect. Tom Rousell, Survive the Jive. All right, LJMV says, it just says, aim high, vote low, millions must go, exclamation mark. Yeah, great, brilliant. LJNV again says, Trump is doing a good job of ruining right-wing parties around the world with his reckless behaviour. Look what happened in the Canada election. Yeah, I mean, it's that Canada thing, that Mark Carney win in Canada does seem like it's difficult not to see that as some sort of knee-jerk reaction against Trump amongst the Canadian electorate, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, okay. He looked like the more right-leaning guy, although I don't think he was... I think he was still a globalist, really, but it looked like he was set to win, wasn't it? All the polls were going to win, and then Carney wins at the last minute. Okay, all right. The Fenlander, 1665, says, two producers, Bo sending you too much coin. No, not enough. We needed two producers. Well, even two producers weren't enough to prevent the technical issue, was it? So we'll try and get it all ironed out. We'll try and get it all ironed out. But thank you for the super chat. So Jute says, Britain is lucky to have Rupert Lowe in Parliament. He's pretty much the best one, isn't he? I can't think of anyone else even remotely close that's actually a sitting MP. Britain is lucky to have Rupert Lowe in Parliament, a man of honour in a den of thieves. The rest of us only have thieves ruling our kleptocracies. Are you from Norway? Is that right? N-O-K? Is that Norwegian? Yeah. No, Rupert Lowe's great, isn't he? He's one of the best ones, if not the best one, right? Literally the best one. What a state of affairs. What an indictment that is that there's like one MP that's actually sort of nativist, wants to put the people of these islands first. What a harsh reality that is. There's one dude, and they try to put him in jail. They try and silence him, try and ignore him at every turn. Try and pour cold water on anything he tries to do or say. Mad. Mad, isn't it? All right, Mr. Pastry 2010 says, who do you think was in the Easter Bunny suit standing next to Trump? Vance Epstein or the next James Bond? Yeah. Imagine that was your job, though. You're like the White House Easter Bunny dude. You've got to go out there with Trump on the balcony in front of, like, the world's media. And while he's standing next to you, he's just talking about bombing Iran back to the Stone Age. And you're in an Easter Bunny costume. Yeah. It's surreal. Almost surreal. Field Marshal Dawn Browning again. She says, thank you for making time, Rupert. You must be very busy this time of year. Yeah. Many thanks to Mr. Lowe. Many thanks. Honour and a privilege. Really is. Real treat that he gave us a little bit of his time. Okay, Aristotle Luton says, thank you for giving us another option, Rupert. Look forward to Restore Greenwich starting up. The ground game's getting going all across the country. Oh yeah, it's the real deal. Proper real deal up and down the length and breadth of the country. Getting that ground game going. Thank you, Aristotle Luton. And the last one for this morning from Alexander PF4NE says, Alexander Plain, is that, anyway, you say, what are your thoughts on Prince William? Just that. My thoughts on Prince William. He's weak, isn't he? He's a globalist, basically. They send him on, he's just like his father, they send him on tours around the world, and he's like fawning, pearl clutching, no backbone. Yeah, he's just a nothing man, isn't he? It's probably for the best, though. I don't want an ultra-strong monarch who's going to start sticking their oar in policy. It'd be nice if they were patriotic and nativist and based. But they don't need to be. They've got no real power. But that would be nice, wouldn't it? William isn't any of those things, is he? He's sort of a nothing man. Again, another one. That's my feelings on William. If he keeps his nose out of government and policy, that's about the best you can ask for, isn't it? All right. That's the show. It's now 28 minutes past 9, British summertime. On Tuesday the 7th of April in the year of our Lord 2026, you've been the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Thank you for joining me. I hope you enjoyed today's show. A little bit different. The first guest, a little bit different. I hope you enjoyed it. All right, try and make the best of the day ahead if you can. Carpe diem, seize the day. I know it's not always easy, but your time's the most valuable thing you have. Far more valuable than any money or gems or bullion you might own. Far more valuable. You'll never get it back. Try and make the best of the day ahead if you can. All right, until tomorrow morning. Take care.